Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Hunt, Lift, Eat podcast. I'm Carter, and I'm here with Luke in your new fancy podcast studio. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Just down here in Louisiana trying to, you know, find some internet somewhere, and back in Charlie's office here, and it's going well. Got out of the camper for a little while. Got my computer fixed, finally. I'm glad to have internet
in Louisiana, dude.
Dude, it's rough. It's like a third world country.
Well, we've been excited about this episode. We've been talking about this for a long time with our guests we got this week. We've got the one and only Matt Cates, owner and operator of Triple M Outfitters, joining
us. How's it going, guys? How's everybody doing?
We're good. Yeah, this one has been a long time coming. If you, our listeners, will remember, we did an episode, back in February, talking about, I think we were late, released it later, actually. It came out in March, but we were up there. That's where I shot my gator, and Carter and Cole went ballistic on pigs. I think you dropped six or seven of them and started doing the math. You guys were like, oh, we better quit shooting these things. This is too much fun. So no, it was
we were stacking them awesome up there trip for a minute for sure.
Yeah, we were in them. It was a good time. We had a stack of gators and a stack of pigs between the two crews that were out, and it was a hell of a time.
Yep.
That was my first time killing a pig, Matt.
Really?
I didn't know that. Never done it before, man. That was some of the most fun I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah, we got to get you back down, man. This new place we just took over is actually infested with them, and the ranch is leaning on us pretty hard to get the numbers down. So I need you guys to come put some work back in.
Well, we know some guys.
Yeah, we're in for sure. That's one of my favorite pastimes is shooting hogs.
Yeah.
I like eating them too. I love pigs. So I lost, actually. I had killed a couple in Texas, and I left Louisiana. I went home on baby leave. I just had a little girl, and it got so hot here, the freezer that I had outside my camper flipped a breaker. So I lost three hogs and a deer, and that was a mess to come back to and get that freezer cleaned out, because I came back and had an antelope and a mule deer to put in it, and I was like, son of a gun. So I spent the better part of a day trying to clean that freezer out. So I'm hard up for hog right now. I got to get a couple on the ground.
I bet, man. We got plenty of them, that's for sure.
Hell yeah, we'll get something on the calendar for sure. But yeah, stoked to have you on. We've been talking about it since we were there, and schedules have been wild across the board. I know you guys are busy as hell. Especially bringing on that deer lease. And then you were on an elk hunt with Jake, huh? How did that go?
Yeah, it went really good. Jacob didn't wait for us. We our flights got messed up flying in there. You know how that stuff works. And we had a very short layover, and as we were landing, our connecting flight was taken off.
Oh, man.
That's the worst.
We were a day late getting to our elk hunt, and so we actually arrived, which was supposed to be our first day of hunting. When we get there, I literally pull into the lodge, and Jacob texts me, big bull on the ground. And I'm like, all right, well, I've been here about 30 seconds. That's cool. And me and my son ended up grabbing some packs, jumped in a truck, went and found him, and he killed his in a pretty nasty canyon. We had to cut him up down there and pack him out, and that was a good time. Got that one done, and the next afternoon, I killed my elk almost like the antelope hunt. I was sitting on a windmill in a water hole, and a really, really nice bull come in, 26 yards. Shot him. He ran probably 30 yards, tried to run back uphill, faded out right there, flipped over completely backwards, stuck his horns in the ground. It was like what you dream of for bow hunting. And awesome. 2 days later, we called in a nice 5x5 for my son. He smoked him, got that on film, 37 yards. And just a great hunt, great time, great place. And everything worked out real good. We worked out a deal with that guy there to take over about 5,000 acres. And we're going to start taking our clients out there and putting on some elk and mule deer hunts at that place.
Come on.
That's in Montana.
Yeah, that was Montana. We were on the east side of Montana. And I've been guiding out in Montana and Colorado and Wyoming for about 15 years. And something else that we're adding to our list of things like we need more to get into, right? We're already, it's not enough hours in the day, but I just leased 21,000 acres in South Dakota, which is absolutely covered in mule deer and whitetails. Went out there last year to look at it, and we can ride around for a couple hours in the afternoon in the truck and literally look at 300 to 400 deer.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm actually leaving Monday to head back out there to look at an additional 5,000 acres that butts up to it. And I'll have a nice little chunk wrapped up right there, and we can do some pretty amazing hunts out there.
Luke and I both have South Dakota points.
I don't, because I forgot.
Oh, Luke, I've been reminding you for 2 years.
I know, I'm terrible. I'll watch.
Well, you know, you can still put in for a point right now.
Okay, I'm going to open that up.
And you should draw next year.
On a browser like right
it
now.
It only takes 1 point. But something to think about is archery tags are over the counter. You don't need any points to draw an archery tag.
Well, that's good to know. Maybe I'll just do that.
Yeah. But I mean, if you want to take a shot at it for $30, go put in for a preference point on the West River region. And if you draw next year, great. But if not, you can literally go online the day before you want to go and buy an archery tag, and we can absolutely go hunt. I killed a really nice mule deer out there last year with a bow.
Sounds like we're going mule deer hunting in South Dakota next year, Carter. Let's do it.
Yeah. And there's it's kind of a sleeper state for some whitetails. I mean, there are some absolute really, really great whitetails in that part of the world.
Is it like Wyoming where it's just a deer tag? It's either species, or is it split to where you have
if you get the general tag, it's an either or. Whatever you can kill a whitetail or a mule deer with it. And then there is a special tag that you can get, and the preference points, you can kind of split them. You can get every other year, you can get a whitetail only. And then, so every other year you can get the whitetail only. And then on the off years, you can draw the other tag that is good for either or.
No way.
So if you play the system right, it's a pretty awesome deal.
I do like how friendly South Dakota is to non-resident hunters. I feel like they do a really good job.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, so when I went out there last year, I took some thermal stuff with me. I was going to actually look at some ag fields at night. I just wanted to kind of see where the deer were hanging out and kind of get my scouting, kind of just put it in fast forward, right? Like, go look and see what ag fields have the most deer on it at night. Well, those deer got to be somewhere relatively close during the day. I only had a limited amount of time to be out there, so I was really trying to like maximize my scouting efforts. And actually never even went and looked at deer with it. I went out the first night and had an electronic call and started calling some coyotes. I called in 9 coyotes and never moved one spot. They were coming from every direction. I would shoot one or two and just sit and let the call keep going. 5 minutes later, here come more coyotes. I'd shoot one or two of them. Here come more coyotes. I actually never left that one spot and sat there for an hour shooting coyotes and never even turned the call off. It's like they've never heard a call before. They don't know what's going on. It was a pretty good time.
That's awesome.
So cool.
Yeah, because they get smart quick. They get call shy and yeah,
they do. That's, you know, on my, this new deer lease, I actually don't let my members do that because, once you educate them, that coyote, he hangs on to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you can mess up on you can bust a turkey or bust a deer or something. And, you know, give them, if you leave them alone for a minute, they'll generally get back to their territory and doing their thing. But that coyote, man, he's a different animal for sure. If you educate him, you've just made it real difficult to ever even see him again.
Yeah, hogs are the same way. I used to trap pigs in Georgia as part of the trapping program for Fort Benning. And if you screwed up, we couldn't set electronic traps, so they all had to be triggers with like
a
550 cord, and they'd go in there and root around and trip them. But if you set your line too tight and they were able to get out or, you know, whatever, like, you were never going to, that pig, and I would see them, and the ones that were smart, the big ones, they would, you know, all the babies would go inside the trap, follow the corn in, and the big ones would just sit right outside and they wouldn't go in, and that, you know, you'll never trap those hogs. It's crazy.
That's the deer lease I have now, that 8,000 acres I took over. That's what the ranch is dealing with. The cowboys that work on the ranch there, they do try to trap the hogs. And I actually talked to one of them this morning, and he was like, "We just can't trap them. We've trapped them for so long that the ones that are left, they just will not go in a trap. You can bait it with anything you want to bait it with. They will not go in." So they're struggling with that, but we're going to do our part and kind of put a bunch on the ground for them and get the numbers right.
Heck yeah. Well, we'll do our best to help out.
Absolutely, man. Love to have you guys back.
Y'all have put some nice deer on the ground this season too.
Yeah, we have. So with this new lease, our members are allowed to kill 3 trophy bucks. You know, we get unlimited hogs. They get 5 turkeys. I killed all 3 of my bucks in the first 10 days of bow season. So I've had a pretty solid year. I killed that big bull in Montana, came back, got home at like 1 o'clock in the morning on Friday night. Our bow season started Saturday morning. I had one on the ground second day. I killed one 2 or 3 days later and killed one a week later. So my deer season went real quick. It was lasted about 10 days.
Can't beat that. But
no, I mean, I love bow hunting though. So I'd rather kill them with my bow than anything.
So yeah, it's an addiction.
We did good. And my wife ended up killing one. And I know, you know, a lot of people's perception about Florida is we just don't have big deer. But just to give everybody a little like insight on what is going on this ranch. So this ranch developed a feed program, and they developed the feed itself and has this company making it and distributing it to all the members. This ranch has 670 members on the hunting club. It's 365,000 acres. And it's split up into 47 different leases. And so this year, they've already killed a 177, I think a 163, a 156, I believe. And, you know, those are great deer for Florida. Those are great deer for anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you start telling people that we're producing that in Florida, and they think it's high fence or something of that nature, which it's not at all. This is just a working cattle ranch, and that's all it is. But they also have an age structure. You cannot kill a deer unless he's 5 and a half years old. Mm. So even in Florida, if you feed them and let them grow, they will get big.
That's so important. And my my cousin just killed a really nice ape on our property in Virginia. And you don't see a lot of big deer up there because it's up in the mountains, higher elevation. Yeah. And but we had him on camera last year. My uncle actually took a video of him. We think it's the same one. I'm 90% sure. And the difference in his mass going from 4.5 to 5.5 is just unbelievable. And letting them get that old, everybody, you know, because that they might have the same, you know, antler height and width, but the big difference from 4 to 4.5 to 5.5 is the mass that they pack on. And just too many folks just shoot them right there at that 3.5, 4.5, and they don't let them get. And we've been making a real concerted effort on that property to not shoot those little eights, and it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it's so they've done so this ranch that I hunt on, they have a team of biologists. And they sectioned off a certain, like, I think 3 or 4,000 acres, and they use it as a testing facility for their feed, their management purposes, and just to see what really is going to work and what's not. So they have determined, they actually know exactly how old some of these deer are because they fly this place in a helicopter and they shoot them with a net gun, and they put tags in their ears, document where they tagged them. You know, and they're fawns when they tag them, so they know exactly how old they are. And they have determined that with this feed program, from 0 to 6, those deer put on 20 to 30 inches every year. From 7 to 9 or 10 on this feed program, they kind of stay dormant. They don't really put much horn size on. They don't really drop any either. They just kind of stay even keel where they're at. But once they get over 10 years old, most people think they start declining. These deer go back to putting 15 to 20 inches on again.
Really?
And a lot of people think that a deer doesn't even live that long. They've got deer out there documented right now that they've netted out of a helicopter. Now, this is not high fence. Got to keep that in mind. This is all low fence, pure wild stuff. They've got whitetails out there right now documented on camera, and some that they are harvesting that are 13 and 14.
Wow.
And they're still putting horn. They're still putting inches on every year. They killed a 173 last year. So that what kind of where I got started with that was that buck my wife killed this year, you know, going back to, so we're producing some big horns, but we also have the body size. That buck that she killed a week ago was 193 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
That's huge deer. Cause I mean, yeah, whenever you talk about Florida and whitetails, it's always a small body deer. I mean, down here in Louisiana hunting public, like I saw a doe and I was like, oh, that's a young one. And then I was talking to my buddy. He was like, no, dude, they're all just small bodied. But I mean, that feed really makes that big difference. What kind of feed are they putting? I'm assuming pretty heavy protein in the off season.
Yeah, it's a protein pellet. So they have two different types. They have, when they're putting that horn on, they're in velvet and they're in their growing season. It's high protein, a little less fat. Once it gets into, you know, their hard horn and they're starting to do all that, our rut starts like mid-September here. So they transition our feed into something with a little higher fat content. They bump down the protein just a little bit, but they're just trying to keep those deer healthy during that chasing season. You know, when they're just, they're not on feed anymore. They're just hammering the does. And so I run protein feeders on my place, on my 8,000 acres, and they're gravity fed protein feeders. They can eat all they want. So before the rut hit, they were emptying 650-pound protein feeders. They were emptying them about every 10 days. Now that the rut's going, and it's even though we're creeping up on mid-November, you know, they're still chasing right now. And those 650-pound feeders, I've filled them up maybe once in the last month and a half. That's how that just kind of puts a, like brings it to light how they stop feeding and they're just, they have that short window to breed those does. And that is all these bucks care about. And it shows when you're going to fill those feeders up, went from every 10 days being completely empty to a month and a half. And when you're seeing them on camera, you're seeing them run down and hips are starting to show and they're, the kind of the problem with that is this ranch has a tremendous amount of deer on it. So all those bucks aren't getting those does bred in the first month and a half. So every 30 days, those does cycle again, if they didn't get bred and, you know, 28 to 30 days, I believe it is, they recycle and they keep them bucks busy. They keep them running for sure. But it's interesting to be involved with the biologist and get that deep into what really, really goes on.
Yeah, that's crazy interesting. Are you guys going to make a concerted effort to remove more does late season to try to balance it out a little bit and thin them out? Or what's your strategy
there? We are. My particular lease, I just took this lease over this year. This is our first year here. I feel like with 8,000 acres, we're a little bit light on our deer numbers. So I actually did not allow any of my members to kill does this year. We're leaving them. And then we're going to reassess early next year. What we did this year is we flew it in a helicopter and did a deer survey and really tried to get a solid number on what we were working with. And then with us starting this feed program, also besides the feed I'm putting out, I also have 16 food plots. So we have the capacity to hold a lot of deer with the feed that we have. So we're going to let it go this 1 year, see if we can increase our deer herd, which, you know, not killing the does, you're absolutely going to accomplish that. And then we'll take a look and see where our numbers are. And then we'll determine if we want to kill some does and how many we want to kill and keep it right. We're trying to keep that buck to doe ratio, what it needs to be. And then also, you know, he's trying to have plenty of deer because we want to have this place long term. And it's awfully nice to be out there and see a lot of deer. And so there's kind of the fine line with that. You know, it's, you're trying to keep 12 members happy and they've got kids and relatives and stuff that want to hunt. And even myself, I like to see a lot of deer. You know, it's nice to sit in a tree stand and see 15, 20.
Yep.
So it's a pretty special place. Really excited to have you guys down and check it out and show you what Florida can do with some management efforts.
Yeah, I'm excited. That's awesome. It sounds like an incredible spot. You're building quite the little outfit and empire now. I mean, you guys are growing crazy. Huge expansion.
Yeah, I've been guiding out in Colorado and Wyoming for years. I was actually on a TV show for about 8 years and met some really cool people, you know, because they wanted us to travel all the time and hunt. And I average about 500 clients a year now. Our clientele base is huge. But you guys know as well as I do what affords us to do that is we can hunt all year long with the hogs and the alligators to where – I mean, most of your other outfitters, especially out west, what do those guys have? 2 months of hunting season and they're done for the year.
Right.
You know, unless they're getting into waterfowl or, you know, prairie dogs or predator hunts or something. But as far as their big game, they're pretty limited to just a couple of months. So they can't run that many clients in that amount of time, which we can hunt all year long. So that affords us a lot more clients come through. It's not a weekend gig for us or a part-time job. We hunt almost every single day. And a lot of people think, man, that's the dream job. And it is in a lot of ways, but there's some days, man, you just want a break. So I'm sure you guys feel that too.
Yeah, that's been the irony of starting a company in the hunting industry. And I've said it a couple of times, but my hunt's become harder to do and shorter in duration because, you know, you're tied up. This is the busy season. And, you know, I'm going to be launching Starlink when we got a fourth rifle elk hunt coming up in Colorado here soon. And it's during Black Friday. And, you know, it's where we're selling a lot of t-shirts and stuff. So I'll be on the glassing point with the generator fired up so I can run the computer and monitor Black Friday if we're not stalking. So, yeah, it's
absolutely
funny. Yeah, but no, that's awesome. I'm really excited that, you know, you guys are able to expand like that. We had a blast at Triple M, was really impressed with everybody we interacted with. And some of the operations, I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but we've just been at some where it feels a little staged and canned. And, you know, that was it was a good time. It was a very unique experience for us too. Like, I've grown up on the East Coast hunting whitetails. I've been out west for a while now and hunted a decent chunk out here. But, you know, when we jumped in the swamp buggy, you know, it was so cool. It was just such a unique experience across the board. And I mean, I'd never killed a gator, and being able to, you know, shoot one it's just a really educational experience for me and the guides were awesome. They let us jump in and get our hands dirty, and that's how we like to do it. You know, we don't want the guides to do all the work. We're there to be fully immersed in the environment, which was really cool.
Yeah. And the reason I run my hunts like that is because I buy hunts too. You know, I go on guided hunts. I buy hunts from other outfitters and I do my thing, and I know what I want to see and I know what I want to do when I go on a hunt. So I try to roll that over into when I'm offering hunts, you know, hey, these people don't want to sit back and watch me do everything. There are clients that do want that, but there's also guys, they want the experience. They want to be in the mix. And when I'm on a hunt, that's what I want to do. You know, we were on that elk hunt and, you know, Jacob's just like me and my son, and we're hands-on. We're going to get dirty. We're going to get bloody, and we're going to pack this elk out. The outfitter is sitting there just looking at us like, what are you guys doing? Like, this is our job. This is what you're paying us for. And it was like, not this week. You're catching a break this week because we don't need our hands held. We don't need a babysitter. You just let us do our thing. We'll get the elk killed. We'll get them out. And that's at the end of the hunt, the guy was like, I need you here more. I need people like you. And why don't you handle this 5,000 acre section? And let's get your hunters up here. You do your thing, because this is the easiest week I've ever had.
That's awesome.
And I love it. I love it when guys come, like when you guys come, you know, you guys grabbing hogs, loading them, grabbing gators, loading them. I appreciate that because I do it every single day. And I know that sounds really cool, but when you do it every single day, it's not that cool. it gets old quick. And it's, man, it's really refreshing to have some guys jump in and grab things and pumped up to do it. And it's just like, man, it's not even like clients. It's like your buddies came hunting.
Yeah. Right. That's how
we That's what we really liked about it. Exactly. Yeah. It was like, oh, these are our people. Yeah,
exactly.
And that's what I like. I hate having to worry about new clients. And we've done a really good job with that over the years where our return clientele base is enormous. I rarely do any advertising. I'll do my social media posts just to keep interest, and all of our clients like seeing it. And so our return clientele base keeps us rocking and rolling. We don't really have to beat the bushes for new clients. And I love that because I've got guys who have been hunting with me now for 20 years.
That's awesome.
So some of these people we actually do family vacations with now. So that's how everything comes full circle. And my take on things, if you turn a client that comes and hunts with you one time into a return client, and then sometimes that turns into now you're doing vacations and trips and just calling to see what's up and say hi and how you doing. Like, you're doing something right when you've got that type of return business and you're making those kind of friends. I think we're doing everything right.
Yeah, I'd say so from my perspective. And I had a blast and getting my hands on a gator for the first time. It was cool. And I like the choose your own adventure aspect too. You know, next time I come down there for a gator, I want to kill one with a bow and, you know, be able to get up on it. And not exactly what you said too, is like, we want to get our hands dirty. Like, after I shot that one and she went under the water, I'm terrible with names. It was the younger guy that was with us, but he was like, yeah, you got to go jump in there and drag it out. And I was literally walking in the water. He was like, no, I'm kidding. We're going to hook it. But my dumbass was like, all right, you tell me that's what I got to do. I'm in there, man. I don't care.
Like, right. It's game on. It's happening.
Yeah. So I love that. And yeah, we had an absolute blast. So you guys are definitely got it going on there. And just, you know, for anybody that lives, even in Georgia, like, it's hard to get a gator tag. And so the fact that you guys have all those depredation tags when you're helping with, I mean, I've never, like, that's an insane amount of gators that you guys got down there. It's wild.
No shortage.
Jake was showing me the videos, like the canal, and they're rutting and there's just like 100 gators in there. It's wild.
So I kind of do that every year. We have a special place. Like, it's, that ranch is 6,000 acres. And it's surrounded by St. John's River. We're surrounded by protected waters. Nobody else can hunt. So that's good for us because those gators can live there in peace. And then they come over to our side. You know, we take a lot of hog carcasses and we let the processor dump his carcasses and stuff out there. And, you know, we're feeding them and we're drawing gators in. That's why we've been able to kill gators on this place for 25 years. And without running out, we have as many there now as we did 20 years ago.
Yeah, there's definitely no shortage of gators or pigs.
So what I like to do during May is our alligator rut. That's their breeding season. There's one section, and this section of canal is probably literally 250 yards long. So I go down there every year, and there's going to be about a three-week span. All year long, there's going to be 5 to 10 gators in this little stretch that you can see any day you want to ride down there. But during that 3 week stretch of the rut, that is like the meeting place. It's like the bar. That's where everybody goes to find what they're looking for. And during that 3 week stretch, you can go down there just about any day and there will be anywhere from 200 to 350 gators literally stacked on top of one another like cordwood. It is crazy the amount of gators that pile into this little stretch of canal just during the breeding season. And then 1 week after breeding season is over, it's back to 5 to 10, just like it never happened. But I've got some pretty cool pictures on my phone for the last 10 years, I always go take pictures, and I've got a picture on my cell phone from this last May that I'm going to say there's 300 gators in this picture.
Oh my gosh.
They're stacked on top of one another so heavy you can't even count them. And pretty crazy, pretty amazing time of year.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd love to get down there sometime just to see that. It's so foreign to someone who's never like grown up around gators. And
yeah,
I was stationed at Fort Benning for a while, so I've seen them, you know, but not like that, not in those numbers. That's crazy.
It's right.
Well, it's when we found one within the first 7 minutes of starting the hunt, I was like, what?
Yeah.
They were like, we can, everywhere.
Yeah, we can ride around those reservoirs and canals and stuff. It's not uncommon. I can show everybody 150 alligators a day.
That's wild.
And it's, you know, you guys saw the place. There's no high fences. There's no anything. This is real deal. And yeah, we can ride around and see 150 a day. No problem.
Will they, are they feeding on the pig? I mean, I know you guys are dumping carcasses and stuff, right? Will they feed on the pigs? Like when they come to water and stuff, are they hitting?
They will occasionally. An alligator's main diet is fish and turtles.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Fish and turtles. If you, we gut some of the alligators sometimes because they'll obviously have something in their stomach.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just be really extended and you can tell there's something in there. And it's always curious, right? Like he's definitely got something in there. Wonder what it is. And we've gutted a few of them. I've found raccoons, but it's mostly turtles, mostly fish. And I have cut a few open that did have some hog pieces in them. Like you get a piece of that hide, that black hair and stuff like that. So yeah, it's occasional, but their main diet's definitely fish and turtles.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
It feels good hunting on a, you know, cattle ranch and these ag farms too. You feel like you're participating in something good as well with your setup that you have there.
Yeah, you are. And especially with this new lease, we have the ranchers there. They're like, hey, here's the deal. Like if you guys don't get the hog numbers in control, we will actually like turn the cowboys that work for the ranch, we'll turn them loose and let them hunt them with dogs and hunt them at night and just do whatever we can do to keep them down. Because they have some leases out there. The guys are just, you know, they're hardcore into the deer. Some of them actually aren't hardcore into any hunting. They just buy a membership out there to get out of town, get away, camp for the weekend, get rid of the cell phone, take the wife and kids out, and then just be out in the country for a little bit. I know some guys that have some leases out there currently and have hunted out there for 6-7 years and have never killed a deer because they have the money to do it and they do it just to get away.
Yeah.
So yeah, when you get a crew like us out there that do, you know, heavy into hunting, they love us. They love us to death because we really do make a difference in the hog numbers. And you're talking about a working cattle ranch. This ranch survives on, you know, how many cattle can they feed? How many can they graze? And if you got hogs turning your pastures upside down, it does make a difference. I don't know that people really understand how hard they hit things. And you get a bunch of hogs on your ranch tearing your pastures up, you are not grazing enough cattle to, you know, to the potential that the land can do. So it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, they're so destructive. And I don't think a lot of folks think about Florida as a cattle state, but it's actually got a very large, you know, cattle operation just across the board. I used to work on a pretty big cattle operation in Virginia, and the guy who runs the spot grew up in Central Florida. And I mean, he's as cowboy as anybody I've met out in Colorado or Wyoming, you know, like, and it's interesting because at the time I was like, what, you're from Florida? Like it just didn't make sense to me. And then, you know, he explained to me the how much there really is. He's like, if you get off the coast, you know, it's all ag. You know, if you're not on the beach.
Once you leave the coastline, you're in the woods.
Yep. Yep. So. Yeah.
And there's been many, many years that Florida was the number one cattle producing state in the U.S.
Yep.
Everybody thinks it's Texas, hands down. Florida has beaten out Texas many, many times. And that all falls along with our weather, right? We don't get extreme weather. A lot of sunshine, a lot of rain. Our grass grows like crazy. We can feed a lot more cows per acre, where there's certain parts of Texas, it's hard for them to grow a blade of grass. And so, yeah, Florida is a major, major player in the cattle industry.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something when we came out to Colorado. I still can't figure out half the time what the hell these cattle are eating, because I think,
yeah.
So back home, we can do 20 head per acre in Virginia, right. And then they're doing one cow per 20 acres in Colorado, sure. Or more, you know, because yeah. They just don't have the water, they don't have the forage, and they just can't grow it. And then if they're bringing and buying hay, like the costs are just huge because they're having to bring it in from other states or they're having to irrigate and, you know, buy it from the east. So yeah, it's Florida. Absolutely. Definitely. I could see how much are they running with the heat. Is there a lot of Brangus or what's the primary?
Yeah. Yep. A lot of Brangus is pretty, pretty predominant here. They do, you'll see certain ranches that'll, you know, they'll mix it up a little bit and do different things, but I think overall Brangus is probably the number one in the state.
For our listeners that aren't familiar, a Brangus is a cross between a Brahma and an Angus. It's just a really good warm weather breed. Mm-hmm. You see them a lot in the South, deep South. You see them, actually they're popular in Central America as well.
Yeah.
The crossing the breeds, and then Northern South America as well. So it's a really hardy breed that can handle high temperatures lot better than just a straight Angus can. So that's cool.
Yep.
That's awesome. I can talk ag all day, but I'm just excited to get back down there. Cause it feels almost like hunting in a different country for us, you know, we're running through these palm groves and it feels foreign, you know, when you've been used to hunting in other places. So it's a cool experience and being able to immerse yourself in it and hunt species that you might not get to hunt. And, you know, you guys are set up and the pricing is real reasonable. You can have an awesome experience and it's pretty damn cool across the board.
Yeah. Anybody can afford our hunts, especially our hog hunts. They're ridiculously cheap and everybody across the board, they don't have to save for it. Everybody can come up with enough to come do a hog hunt with us. And that's the way I like it. I like having all walks of life. You get to meet so many people and from so many different places. And it's just awesome. And we keep it priced that way. I've been the same price for 15 years. And everybody tells me, you know, you need to raise your prices. And it's like, I don't want to raise my prices because I've been taking the same people for almost 20 years. So like I've even had them tell me, hey, if you raise your prices, we'd still be here every year. No problem. But it's like, you know what? I make a good living. I'm comfortable. I like where everything's at. It's just smooth. I'm a big fan of if it's not broke, don't fix it. Everything just runs good. And I like where we're at. So if I raised it, I'm going to lose some people. I'm still going to keep a bunch of them. And it would probably still amount to the same amount of money. But I don't know. It's just, I kind of feel a sense of loyalty with the clients and guys that come hunt with us every single year. I just leave it where it's at. Everybody's happy with it. It works for them. It works for me. Really don't see any reason to change it.
Well, that's admirable. And I'm definitely, definitely going to take advantage of it. So we'll be back. We're going to be return customers for sure. And what I love about it is, you know, what you mentioned before is the year round aspect of it. It's the perfect thing to do to fill in that dead space, you know, post deer before turkey season opens. It's like, hell yeah, let's go kill some pigs, maybe shoot a gator and have a good time.
Yeah. And you guys are going to get to see some different terrain when you come for this new ranch. It's a lot of big cypress swamps in it. It's got everything. It's got pasture, palmettos, pines, cypress, oak hammocks. It's pretty much got about everything that you can get dealt in Florida. And it's all in one piece of ground right there that I control. And absolutely loaded with game. You're going to see a ton of whitetails while you're here. We have Osceola turkeys coming out of our ears. and the hogs are just rampant. So looking forward to having you guys back. We'll have another great hunt. We can't kill gators on this ranch because they're heavy into the egg harvest program. So they like their gators left alone. But that 6,000 acres that I took you guys hunting on, we've got gators coming out of our ears. So that was not even a factor when they offered this lease to me. I knew right from the rip we couldn't do any gator hunting there. And I was totally okay with it because I feel like I've already got the best alligator ranch locked in Florida anyway. So this was more geared towards the hogs, deer, turkey thing. And plus we've got a camp there. So camp life is always nice, right? Like we don't have that at the gator ranch, but we do now. You guys can come in, stay at the camp. We can cook out at night, build a fire, sit around and BS. And that's a huge part of hunting for me. I absolutely love that as much as the hunting. I love the sitting around and I love hearing you guys' stories about a deer you killed out west or an elk or something like that, a mule deer. And I love hearing about everybody else's hunts.
Yeah, that's a really cool new addition, man. I'm glad you have that because, you know, it adds that much more to the experience if we can be there.
Yeah.
You're just so much more immersed and be with y'all and you and your people around the campfire, like you said. Like, that's such a big part of it and such a huge draw of why hunting is what it is to all of us, you know? So I was really excited when you told me about that. I'm excited for that.
No, I had that one time before and that ranch ended up getting sold. So, you know, the lodge went with it, but this camp situation is really, really cool. We've got everything set up. You know, we can handle about 10 people at a time, which we generally don't have groups that big, but it's not uncommon to have 3 to 5 or 6 at a time. It's pretty normal, but yeah, I love that part of it. I love sitting around. I love to cook. So I love sitting around cooking out, grilling around the fire, you know, having some drinks or something and just catching up and hearing about everything that everybody's got going on and just talk about life in general. And that's when you really get to know your clients. Because you guys know how it is. Sometimes when we're on that buggy, it gets Western, man. It gets fast and furious. And you're not talking about real life stuff right then. You're trying to get some stuff done.
Game time.
And around that campfire, you get to sit back and really get to know your people. They get to know you a little better. And that's where those friendships start to take place. And I've done the hunting thing so long, man. I still get excited. I love it. But it's that quality time with good people. The older you get, that it started to become more important to me the older I get.
Yeah, I understand that completely. And that's really like a core tenet for us with HLE is just the community aspect of it. And I think that's what sets us apart from a lot of companies and brands is we're just so focused on that. And that's without that piece of it. And I like solo hunting and I like going out and I just like to hunt, but there's definitely something missing when you don't have that camp. You know, that's such a big part of it. And meeting new folks and being in camp with new folks is just, it just takes the experience to the next level. So
absolutely.
I love that.
Well, we've got it all under wraps now, so
perfect. Good. Well, I'm excited as hell. Let's get a little bit. I'm interested in your story. I mean, you said you've been guiding out west for 15 years. Are you from Florida originally?
Yeah, I was born and raised right here, man.
What took you out west? Just wanting to chase it.
Oddly enough, I started out working at a grocery store. It was a meat cutter at a grocery chain here they call Publix. So I cut meat there for about 13 years. Kind of wasn't making the money that I wanted to make. And I started actually doing some landscaping on the side. And shortly after I got started, my 2 days off a week from the grocery store doing landscaping, I was making more in 2 days than I was all week at the store. So I'm like, man, I'm gonna do this full time. And I did it, and I did it for a long time. And that's what got me into the guiding. was because when I was in the landscaping business here, we don't get weather like you guys get, but we, in our wintertime, we still get cold enough that our grass doesn't grow. So we were cutting grass and doing those things about every other week. So that gave me every other week off for, man, 5 months. So I started thinking, okay, you know, what can I do on my off weeks to make even more money? And you know how it is. You guys know the hunting, the habit on the hunting deal. It costs some money to go do these hunts.
Yep. Not the cheapest hobby. Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta dig in your pockets a little bit sometimes, especially if you want to start going out west. So, you know, I'm watching these hunting shows and stuff, and I hunted my whole life here. I was taking care of hogs on ranches, hunting 5 nights a week, 6 nights a week with dogs, and killing gators just to sell hides and meat. Like, it wasn't even guiding anybody. I was just killing them. And, you know, I was averaging about right about 1,000 hogs a year I was catching with the dogs. We were killing a couple hundred gators and selling them. And finally, a guy called me one day, and he was like, I got some friends in town. Can you take them hunting for me? And I'm like, well, I'm going anyway. I'll take them. He's like, what do you want for money? I'm like, I don't want anything. I'm going. They can just go with me. So I took them. At the end of the night, they all gave me $150 a piece. And I was like, that was pretty cool. You know, it was a nice little bonus for a night out hunting. Shortly after that, they called me, wanted to go again. And then they told a few people, those people called and wanted to go. So I started doing that. I was like, hey, you know what? I got a little bit of money here. I'm going to take this money and go on my first guided hunt. So I took that money and I bought a black bear hunt in Canada. And went up there and killed 2 black bears and had a phenomenal time. And I'm like, I'll just take enough people every year and I'll do 1 guided hunt a year. And that'll kind of feed my addiction to do something different than what I do every day here. And went on an antelope hunt in Wyoming the following year. And next thing I know, more people are calling. I don't have a business name. I don't have anything because I'm not doing it as a business. I'm just playing. And then Mossy Oaks Hunting the Country called me. I had taken somebody along the lines that was tied to Mossy Oak, and they were like, we want to do a TV show. A friend of ours hunted there, and they had a blast, and we want to do that. And they were like, what's your business name? I'm like, I don't have one. Well, are you insured and all this? No, I'm not. I don't have anything. And they were like, yeah, that doesn't work. We can't do that. And I'm like, well, too bad. Like, it's no big deal for me. I don't care. So they kept pushing. And we came up with a name, got licensed, insured, and all that. And I was just doing it still to play. This was not my business. I never thought this was going to go anywhere besides me making play money. And did that TV show and kind of kept rolling with it. You know, of course, that generated some hunts and some new clientele. And the very first year I started like playing with it, I ended up taking 36 clients. The following year, it jumped to 80. The following year after that, it jumped to like 120. And I was like, that's when I was like, okay, this is either gonna level out, because if it keeps going, I've got to make a decision. Like, I can't keep doing both, because now I'm burning the candle at both ends, taking 100-something people hunting a year, plus owning a landscaping business that I was still personally doing. So I ended up hiring some people to take over the landscaping and started hunting full time. And it has still never just leveled out. It just still keeps going through the roof. And we've been at about 500 clients a year, to the point now to where I do turn down some clients. You know, I'm sure you guys deal with it in business, right? Like, you'll get a guy that'll call and try to book a hunt. He's wanting a little too much or wanting something too specific. Or like, I'll get guys that'll call me up, just to give you an example. And they're like, I want a 12-foot gator. And if you can't guarantee me a 12-foot gator, I ain't coming. And I tell them to go hunt somewhere else. because the first gator we see, maybe 12 foot, we kill a very large number of 12 footers every year, but it's a free range fair chase hunt. It'd be like you guys calling up a whitetail outfitter in Iowa and being like, I want a guaranteed 200 inch 12 point typical, or I'm not coming. He's going to tell you to go kick rocks. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Either that, or he's going to blow some smoke up your butt just because he wants to take your money.
Right.
Now, that's a very doable deal in Iowa or certain places. You may be able to kill that there. But he can't guarantee you that if you're not in a high fence. And just like with me, you know, I can't guarantee somebody that. So guys like that, I'll kind of, and usually when I tell them to go somewhere else, they kind of level it down a little bit and end up coming anyway. But yeah, that's kind of how I got going in all this, man. It was actually, I don't know if I want to say accidental, but it definitely was not a plan. It just started out initially as a favor to a friend. And then it rolled into, hey, I'm going to roll with this small number of people and just have some play money. And I'm going to go travel and hunt. To there for quite some time. I didn't get to do any hunting because I was so busy. I mean, you guys know how that is. I'm sure you deal with that with the hunt, lift, eat stuff. Like, you get so busy, you probably find it hard to find time for yourself.
Oh yeah. You know, you got to make that concerted effort, because you'll blink and all of a sudden you're like, that's what we keep having a joke that like next month it's going to slow down, but it just keeps, you know, getting more and more busy and speeding up faster and faster. And yeah, I get that completely. That's awesome though. And it's funny how that works, because that was a similar thing to me. It was, I got a sewing machine, made some patches, sewed on some hats, and had no intention of this growing into anything.
Right.
And I just wanted to learn a little bit about business, and a couple people bought them, and mostly people I knew, and then some strangers bought them. And then from there, it just kind of snowballed. And then all of a sudden you look back and you're like, how did I get here?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I definitely sometimes I have to reel myself in and sit back and look at, hey, like, you asked for this, and it's, you get to go to work and do what you, your passion. So sometimes I have a day where I get aggravated about something and I'm like, you know, what am I doing here? And why am I doing this on this level? And I don't need all this, but you kind of got to reel yourself in and look at it and be like, I'm truly blessed with what I've been able to do. And I've actually got where sounds like you're heading to is I've got over the hump now to where I've actually got some people in the mix that are working for me and guiding for me, which goes back to freeing me back up. So my longest stretch was 9 months, 3 weeks. I hunted every single day with no days off.
Holy cow.
And everybody's like, wow, that sounds amazing. Well, it is amazing until you do it. Hunting for basically 10 months every single day, 7 days a week, you're over hunting. You're done with it.
Yep.
So that's when I was like, I'm at the point now where I can absolutely hire people. So I've done that, and you guys met some of them. They guide as good as I do. It's not that I'm the great white hunter or anything. They do everything that I can do. And, you know, that's why they're here. I picked them for a reason. And it freed me up to go do other things, you know, like my Montana elk hunt. A month before that, I was in Alaska for 10 days. So it's just kind of, I have now rolled back into, I get to enjoy hunting again. And that's where you kind of got to sit back and really appreciate where you're at.
You're going to hunt nine months straight every day, Carter?
No, man. I can totally see where that would get old real quick.
Yeah, but it's,
you do anything for nine months straight, it gets old.
Yeah, for sure. But we're lucky. We have some really good clients. We've built a phenomenal clientele base. And there's a lot of guys, when they call up and book, it's like, I know that's going to be a good day.
That's
regardless
awesome.
Of what we kill, just because of the people, it's going to be a good day. And, you know, there's some guys you're going to hunt with that you're going to you're going to struggle with throughout the day, but you're taking 500 clients a year. Not everybody's going to be a pleasure, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've had a little taste. I haven't really guided, but I've been working with several outfitters in Colorado, and I was helping on some prep for the season. And then I was there for during the archery camp, and one of my guys that works for me is guiding for one of them, and was helping set everything up and kind of lending a hand. And some of those clients are like, good Lord, I don't know that I have the disposition to be a full-time guide. I'll be honest. I'd get real frustrated real quick. Carter knows. I'll yell at him in camp or on a hunt. Or I get pretty fired up when folks aren't, at least not doing it the way I think it should be done.
Yeah, I'll give you one example real quick, and it'll kind of sum it up. Like, I've ran into this several times throughout my career for sure, but this one really bothers me. I had a guy on an elk hunt in Colorado. We had 9,000 acres leased up there, all private, where we're only taking like 12 hunters a year. And that was through archery, gun, everything. And we were running probably 80% success on elk. And that's
good.
Pretty damn good for elk hunts.
Oh yeah.
And, I get this guy books a hunt. He's like, all I want is a 300 inch bull. And I'm like, that's extremely doable. Like 300 inch bull is absolutely doable. So I call this bull in. He's coming in on a string. It couldn't be any more perfect. Like, this is what, like, you wish it was on film, right? Like, you wish it was just, you had a camera guy there. This bull did everything we wanted him to do. So when he's coming in, the guy's like, is he 300? And I'm looking at him. I'm like, I absolutely think he's 300. Now, we're talking about a bull that's coming in, bugling, showing off, like he's doing everything, walking right at us. It's hard to judge a bull walking dead away or walking right to you if you're trying to get down to inches. And I'm like, man, I'm calling him 300. He's like, if you tell me he's 300, I'm shooting him. And I'm like, I'm telling you to kill him. And he's like, he asked me like five times, are you sure he's 300? I'm like, sir, he's on one side or the other, extremely close, but I'm calling him 300. And he's like, Matt, he better be 300. And I'm like, kill him. He shoots him, kills him. This guy instantly starts doing like cartwheels, man. He is so excited. He is. So I'm pumped because he's overly pumped. So I'm jacked up. We get to the bull and he was like, you got a tape on you? And I'm like, not in my pack. I got one at camp. He's like, all right, let's get him, like, get the guys here. Let's get him packed out. I want to get a tape on him. And I'm like, hey man, like, just enjoy this right here. Enjoy it. Like, don't let that tape or that number reflect on your hunt. Like, we just had an amazing hunt. You killed an amazing bull and you are stoked. You are on cloud nine right now. And he's high-fiving and hugging, and like, he is so happy. We get back to camp. This guy can't wait to get a tape on this bull. Now, this, mind you, I should have been ready for this. And I wasn't, because to me, it's still 300. So we taped him out. He's 297. To me, that's a 300-inch bull.
Yeah.
But because the numbers said 297... that guy was irate.
No way.
That's
insane. He was irate. He was completely pissed off. It ruined his hunt. That number ruined his hunt.
3 inches.
He would not talk to anybody. He went into the camp, packed his bags. He wanted us to take him out of camp, back to the hotel. He wanted away from hunting camp. He was so disappointed. Because I told him to pull the trigger and it taped out 297. And I'm like, man, that's a 297's 300. Like, if somebody asks you, what did he score? Tell them 300. If a 297-inch bull isn't 300, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That one still bothers me today, because you had a guy that, you know, took time off from work, away from his family, spent a lot of money. Had a great hunt, killed a great bull. And he was upset over literally a couple of inches of horn.
That's insane.
And it's like, it's guys like that that make you have those days where you're like, what is going on here? What is happening? I know if I wanted a 300 inch bull personally, and I killed a 297, I would be every bit as happy with 297 if it was 305.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have cared one bit.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that you will run into.
That and folks being just grossly ill-prepared with their equipment or their gear, or their weapon. They don't know how to shoot. That's something I've already had experience with. That's frustrating. Like, there was guys, they just had that outfit that Garrett's working at that we're going to hunt with and that we have a good relationship with. They're, they had two hunters in the same camp shoot two mule deer doe thinking they were, elk.
Oh my God. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. They thought they were cow elk.
Oh, wow.
They were hunting water. Yeah. They didn't have the guides with them because they were sitting tree stands and shot. It was like 2-3 days apart. One of them didn't say anything, said he missed.
Really?
They went back out there and found the doe on the ground. They had to call CPW. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like stuff like that would be so hard for me. I'd have to take my boot off and stick it in my mouth, not to just lose my mind. Like, how do you do that? Just shoot at the first thing you see and mistake. It happens in Colorado damn near every year. I mean, I'm sure you're aware where people shoot a moose thinking it's an elk, but like,
oh yeah,
that one still is pretty damn inexcusable, but shooting a mule deer doe thinking it's a cow elk is just unbelievable.
I took some guys to Wyoming and there was a bachelor group of bucks. There were 7 bucks in this group that hung out. The first day they get there, I get up on a high spot, start glassing with spot and scope. I find them bedded. And I'm like, they are so killable right now where they're bedded. This is absolutely going to happen. Let's go. So it was a father and son. Now the son was underage. He was, I want to say he was probably like 13, 14. So he had a youth license. So we go, we get on these bucks. They're about, when they finally get up and start feeding, they're about 230 yards. And I always tell everybody, you have to be able to shoot 300 yards out west if you want to be consistently successful.
Yep.
So I get this kid on my pack. I get him rested and I'm like, you do not shoot unless you are comfortable. And he was like, I am solid. And I'm like, all right. There was 2 bucks in this group of 7 that were absolutely bigger than the rest, but they were all good. It is like the moon and stars and everything aligned. There's 7 bucks and 2 does. Everything separates and leaves the biggest buck standing there broadside by himself. And I'm like, this is amazing. The buck standing there, the only deer that is by himself. He's like, I got him. And I'm like, I'm gonna stop talking. You do your thing. Kill him. He shoots and misses. The buck runs, they all run. And then when they all stop, they're about the same distance. They just kind of made like a half moon around us. And the same thing, everything separates and he's by himself. Kid shoots again, misses. They run, they get a little further, stop again. And before I can say anything, he just shoots. And I'm not ready. I was getting ready to tell him something. So I'm not even in my binos. Well, I hear the bullet hit. I get back in my binos. I see the bucks run over the hill. And I'm like, man, I didn't see anything go down, but I heard that bullet hit. And his dad's like, no, he's right there kicking. I can see the snow kicking up. And I'm like, huh, okay. So I'm looking at my binos and I'm like, man, I just don't see horns, but it's a long way away. We get down there. He shot a doe.
Oh my God.
I'm like, there's 7 bucks and 2 does. And the kid was like, yeah, on that last shot, as soon as I saw brown, I pulled the trigger.
Oh boy.
And I'm like, well, we have to call the game warden. And they're like, no, we ain't got to do all that. And I'm like, we absolutely have to call him. Cause that's my job.
That's like your livelihood.
We get caught doing something sketchy. Like it's a, you guys are going to get in trouble, but I'm going to lose my job. Luckily, because it was a youth tag, the youth tag was good for a buck or a doe. That saved him. But still, it's just one of those instances, like, you could have shot any other deer in the field right there, and it would have been a nice buck. But, you know, there's stuff like that happens. And I could talk to you guys about crap like that literally for days. I had a guy show up a month ago. He's unloading right there at the barn where you guys were. And I noticed something's weird about his gun when he's getting it out of his truck. But I go back to loading the buggy up and getting everything ready. And it doesn't even cross my mind again. So we get out there and we find some hogs, and they're kind of, you know, running out across the pasture there. And I tell him to kind of get on him, and just, they're too far and they're running too fast. I'm like, but just look at them. I want you to kind of get dialed into what we're doing here. And he's like, I can't find them. I can't find them. And I'm looking through my binos. I look over at him. He can't find them because his scope is mounted backwards. He's looking through the wrong end. He has the wrong end as the eyepiece. And I just kind of play it off. I'm like, hey, what do you got that gun sighted in for? He's like, I got it dialed in at 100 yards. And I'm like, okay. Did you sight it in yourself? And he was like, absolutely. And I was like, it didn't occur to you when you were sighting it in? Because if I'm not mistaken, you can't see the crosshairs when you look through a scope backwards. So tell me exactly how you sighted that thing in. He kind of just looks at the ground and he was like, you got me.
He's like, my gosh,
I haven't sighted it in. All right, so that's weird to start with, that it's on backwards.
You got the patience of Job, man. I had to come unglued. The top of my head would have flown off.
Well, it gets better. So he reaches up with his fingers and loosens up the bolts to his mounts, flips the scope around, finger tightens it back up, and he's like, we're good now, boss. Let's go. And I'm like, sir. We're gonna have a talk about guns and sighting in, and that ain't gonna work. You're gonna have to use mine. And he was like, what do you mean? He's like, I sighted it in right, but every time I take it somewhere and take it back home, I take the scope off and put it up so it doesn't get knocked off sight. And then I just put it back on the gun and finger tighten it. That's insane. Wow. That's what you think is the right thing to do. But I can't even begin to tell you guys how many times I see stuff like that.
I used to work at a gun range and that type of stuff all the time.
You've seen it all then.
Oh, yeah. I had a lady, it was gun store and gun range. One time I was behind the counter and she was bringing in a pistol. She wanted to get us to appraise it and see what we'd offer. And she pulls it out and she's waving it. And I'm like, ma'am,
yeah.
Can we just put... I'm very polite at this point.
Yeah.
I'm like, can you set it down? And she's like, it's fine. It's not loaded. I'm like, ma'am, I don't care. And I grab it. It was a revolver. And I, popped the cylinder out and just dropped a round right in my hand. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
I just looked at her and her eyes were like saucers. I was like,
oh, yeah.
Let's not point these at anybody ever. I mean, it's crazy. People just get complacent or they just don't know. And I mean, I guess some of it's... You don't know what you don't know, but good Lord,
he decided. Yeah, most don't know.
Yep, and that's
a lot don't know.
She wasn't trying to be, nefarious or anything. She just assumed. I guess
she just didn't know.
Yeah, I think her husband had died, if I remember correctly. This was 20 years ago,
right?
Or it was just one of those things where you're just like, God, Lord. I watched a guy shoot himself in the hand. I had a pistol blow up on me one time. I had a squib round, but I mean, yeah, just all sorts of crazy stuff happens when you're around firearms. And that's another piece is when you're hunting with someone who's not safe and has no muzzle awareness. I'm sure you've run into that a lot, and that can be a dicey situation in and of itself.
If you guys knew how many times I've almost been shot, you would seriously wonder why I still do this job.
Oh, I'm sure.
I've had bullets whiz by my head so close, it moves the hair on my head.
Oh my gosh.
I could only imagine when you're on the swamp buggy and, people shooting across the, at a pig or I mean, yeah. When we were there, one of the guys in Jake's crew shot the, I think he shot the rail, you know, because he wasn't looking at his height over bore with his optic, right? You know, and like,
yeah.
And if you're not,
I've had the buggy shot, I've had the barn shot, I've had my truck shot out west twice. Yeah, it's crazy. Here's one for you. You guys are big into bow hunting like me. You'll get a kick out of this one. So I take a guy bow hunting for hogs. We're spotting and stalking. First hog we get on, 25 yards. He's coming out of like some sawgrass, fixing to walk into a little clear cut. I tell the guy, draw. He draws. As soon as he walks out, the guy steps to the left, but he reveals himself too much. The hog sees him and blows out of there. No big deal. Normal stuff on a stalk. He's still at full draw, and he's kind of looking at me like, what do I do? And I'm like, you can go ahead and let down. He aims his bow up in the air and sends it. And I'm like, holy crap. I'm like, did you mean to do that? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. All right. Like, that's, if you're just sending $25 arrows across the pasture, like, that's your money. Like, I'm just thinking to myself, like, if you want to just send them like that, go for it. Like, whatever. I thought he did it accidentally and just didn't want to say. So we get on another hog. Same thing. He's full draw. Wind, actually, he didn't do anything wrong. Wind switches on us. Hog winds us, blows out of there. He's at full draw. I don't even look at him. I'm just like, go ahead and let down, bud. Just like I would do to you guys or anybody. Go ahead and let down, man. Let's move on. He puts it up in the air, sends it. And I'm like, hey, man, if you keep doing that, you're not going to have any arrows to hunt. And he's like, he looks at me and he is completely dead serious. He's like, you told me to let down. And I'm like, do you know what let down means? And he was like, I'm letting down and you're upset about it. I'm like, give me your bow. I put an arrow in it. I draw it. And then I let it down. He looks at me like I'm an alien. He's like, I didn't know you could do that. I'm like, how did you not know that you could let your bow down without sending an arrow 400 yards across the pasture? And he just literally thought that is when you cocked your bow and you drew your bow, that is the only way that you could let it down was to send it. And it's like, you're special. You're special.
Luke would lose his freaking mind.
Yeah, it'd be bad. Yeah, I'm not cut out for that life.
Yeah, and that's not I've had so many people that are like, Matt, you need to write a book.
You should.
I had a guy shoot himself. I had a guy shoot himself point blank with a 45.
Oh.
Yeah, he shot a hog with his rifle. He gut shot him. You guys know what gut shot animals do. They get all humped up.
Yeah.
So we find him, and he's actually standing out in a field with a bunch of high grass in it. He thinks he's hid, but on the buggy, you guys have been on it. You guys know. You can see a long way.
Yep.
And down into that thick stuff. The guy's like, hey, do you mind if I, like, finish him off with my pistol? I'm like, absolutely, no problem. It's actually a pretty common thing for guys.
Yep.
No problem, man. I'm like, hey, just don't get too close. Just ease up there, put him out, and let's go. So he eases up on him. He shoots and misses. The hog starts running towards him. The hog is not trying to get him. The hog's just trying to get back to the woods. So as the hog's getting closer, this guy's dumping a mag on him. He's boom, 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 boom. Right when he gets to him, the guy turns to run, and when he stretches that leg out to run, he lets one more round off and shoots himself in the top of the calf.
Oh my God.
The bullet goes all the way through his leg and is stuck under the skin on the opposite side, right above his ankle. Now he hits the ground like he was shot in the head. And he's screaming and yelling, the hog got him. The hog got me. The hog got me. The hog never got within 10 feet of him. So we're all actually, like, all of his buddies on the buggy, we're all laughing because we don't have a clue that he shot. We just think the hog scared him. and he's acting like a little girl over there screaming at the top of his lungs. So finally, I'm like, I tap his buddy. I'm like, go get him and let's go. We're dying laughing. He walks over there. He's standing over him, looks down on him. He's like, dude, you shot yourself. And I'm like, what did you say? I jump off the buggy. I run over there. This guy is spewing blood. So I put my hand on it to stop the bleeding. It is so much pressure. It's blowing through my fingers. We put a tourniquet on it, get 911 on the horn. We rush him up to the highway to get him in an ambulance. The whole time he's screaming, the hog got me. And I'm like, brother, you got a bullet hole in the top of your calf. And I've got the bullet in my hand. It's just under the skin above your ankle. And he's yelling at me, I didn't shoot myself. The hog got me. And I'm like, okay, well, you're going to go to the hospital. The doctor's going to pull the bullet out of your leg and give it back to you. And yeah, so I had a guy full on shoot himself point blank with a 45.
Oh my yeah. God.
Just so many things that I've seen and over the years is sometimes it shocks me on like, what are you doing? But when you're taking 500 people a year, you're going to see some things and with how many people we take, we don't see as much as we could for sure. But for the most part, everybody, man, is good people. Everybody's pretty aware of guns and safety, but you absolutely have to stay on your toes. I watch people more than I watch for like hogs and stuff. When we're riding on that buggy, I'm constantly looking. And what's weird is like my hearing is honed in to safeties going on and off.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll be riding, I'll just hear a safety go off. And I'm like, I'll look around. I'm like, hey man, throw that safety back on for me. And they're like, how did you know? And I'm like, I could hear it. Well, how can you hear it riding on this buggy? Because I'm so tuned in to being basically scared of what people will do that like, I'm just tuned into it. And, yeah, man, I've always said that I could have a full-blown, extremely successful TV show if I just had somebody ride along with me every day and absolutely film everything. It would be absolutely entertaining.
Josh.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me in the slightest, though, honestly, unfortunately, but it makes me feel better.
I don't know if there's any outfitter that you could contact on the face of the earth that doesn't have stories like that. If they've done it for a minute,
yep,
every one of them's got stories like that.
What's our next podcast, Carter? We'll start Outfitter Tales.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Man, it's actually there's some good stuff. Like when I buy a hunt and I go with another outfitter, I talk to the outfitters about that. I'm like, so tell me some of your horror stories. And some of the stuff they tell me and some of the stuff I tell them is like, we just look at each other and shake our heads. Like, it's amazing. It's amazing the things that people do.
Well, so I'm glad you haven't caught one of those rounds yet.
No, me too, man. There's been some close calls for sure. Like, you know what my buggy looks like.
Yep.
So I had a lady shoot a hog. The hog actually ran out in front of the buggy. She hit it. It turned and ran right down the side of the buggy and ran behind us. So I turn around and I'm glassing. I want to see where he goes so we can start tracking him. She's standing all the way up in the front of the buggy. She shoots right past my head, shooting at the hog. I'm directly in line. If the hog would have went right or left and I would have simply done this to see where he was going, I would have caught one to the back of the head. She shoots and I turn around and the look on my face must have said it all. And she's like, oh, was I not supposed to do that? And I'm like, what do you think? Like, come on. You were within inches of blowing the top of my head off. Think you were supposed to do that? Do we really need to discuss it?
Oh my God.
That's, I had an elk guide in Wyoming tell me he was guiding a guy. And he was sitting glassing an elk. The guy went and got behind him to get a little bit above him. It was going to make the shot. He has not told this guy to shoot. He told him just to get on the elk. The guide was waiting for the guy to acquire the target so he could move. He wanted somebody to keep eyes on it.
Yep.
So he's watching it. His hunter's behind him, just over him. He says, okay, I've got him. And before he could move, the guy shoots. It literally blows the hat off of his head. Gee. You know, just the pressure coming out of that barrel blows the hat off his head. And he turned around. I have a tendency to not be as rough on people as I should when dumb stuff happens. They absolutely deserve it. Now he was like, unload your weapon, get your crap packed up, your hunt's over. And we're talking like a $7,500 elk hunt. The guy's like, what do you mean my hunt's over? He was like, you just blew the hat off of my head with your rifle. You think we're going to continue to hunt? Your hunt is over. You're done. And the guy's like, well, you're going to give me my money back, right? And he's like, that's hazard pay. No. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that might have been a little extreme. And he was like, Matt, he almost killed me. And I'm like, well, there's that too, you know? It'd be hard to go continue to hunt with that guy and have a good time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'd be hard not to put hands on that guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, good night. Yeah,
that's... For sure. But, yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff happens in this life, man, with... It's you absolutely have to keep eyes on people. I try to prevent most of it. I like to have a little talk with everybody before we get started, tell them what I expect. But you guys know how it is, man. When things get happening and it's fast and furious, just people's natural reaction. And I take it for granted because I do it every day. So I don't get overly excited about it because it's just another day for me. I have to also keep in mind that it might be the first time this guy's ever hunted. It might be the first time he's hunted this year. It might be his only hunting trip this year. So they're amped up beyond what I can actually even like take in. Because with doing it every day, you kind of get a little numb to it. But yeah, there's some wild things that happen, man. It gets pretty crazy.
Yeah, I can imagine for sure. But... If you guys are listening, pay the fuck attention and be safe always. Yeah. That's just the moral of this one. Like when you guys go out and if you're hunting with guides, like be very conscious of the guides. Try to be an asset to the situation and not a fucking liability. Cause it's just like you're right. It's easy to get wrapped up in that moment when it is chaos, yeah. Especially if you're chasing hogs on a buggy through the, you know,
yep.
Through the sawgrass and we were shooting. I mean, it sounded like World War III. And so you could definitely see how guys would get excited if they didn't have that much experience. But you just always have to be cognizant of what's around you, paying attention, you know, where's your muzzle pointed, sight over bore, all that shit. Like just understanding what the hell is going on because it can get real dangerous really quickly, clearly.
That's my big thing is where's your muzzle pointed? Like that's huge, right? Because like, even if there is an accident, everybody's going to come out of it okay if that muzzle pointed in the right direction.
Yep.
You're going to catch some shit over it, and we're going to talk to you about it. But at the end of the day, that's all that's happening is a talking to versus explaining how you shot somebody or hurt somebody.
Or shot yourself.
Muzzle awareness and, man, leave them safeties on. Like, so many people, especially on the buggy, right, like, you guys have been there. It gets fast. And a lot of guys, they want that edge. So they go ahead and take that safety off. And it's like, that's a fraction of a second to flip that thing off, man. We don't need to have it off while we're riding.
Yep.
It's not going to make you successful. It's just going to make you cause an accident. So that's huge for me is muzzle awareness and safety's on. Like there's no edge to having it off prior. Like it's such a quick, easy thing, but you got to definitely keep your eyes on them. That's part of the guide life. You're a babysitter most of the time.
Well, we're excited to get back down there with you, man.
Yeah, we need to get something on the books so we can make it happen, because we get, as you can imagine, we fill up pretty quick. And, you know, you had said something a little earlier in the podcast about just, you know, you always think that, oh, we'll get to this next month, or we're getting ready to slow down. I probably said that about 50 times this summer, you know, on the honey-do list with the wife and just different things that I need to get done. Is we're getting ready to hit our slow season. Well, slow season never showed up this year. It's been crazy. Honestly, I think ever since COVID, we never slowed down during COVID at all. We never missed a lick. I think we were actually busier. And I think that was because a lot of people couldn't get out of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Or they couldn't get to these other countries to do hunts they wanted to do. They were kind of stuck here. So they're like, well, we've already done this and that and the other. What haven't we done? What can we go do? And I think we stayed extremely busy because of that reason, and we can hunt all year long. And then when we took that new realm of people, that opens the door to, because everybody has their little clique of people and the circle that they roll in. And so I think when that happened, it opened the doors to some new people, some new clients. And I did take on a marketing team to do some stuff that I just don't know how to do. And then to even do the stuff that I do know how to do, because I just need some of it off my plate.
Yep.
And they handle some of my social media stuff, but more of the, you know, the Google stuff and all the more technical things that, for one, I don't want to do them. And because I just rather be in the field.
Yep.
And that all helps a bunch. But yeah, we never saw a slow season this year. And as of right now, like January through April is already starting to get booked up, which usually doesn't happen for another month or so. But it's getting to be now where everybody's jockeying for a position. Like they'll call and all that's already booked, so they know the next year they need to call sooner. And then everybody starts doing that, so now they got to even call even sooner than that. And everybody's kind of keeping score with that. So now we start booking up several months earlier than we normally would. But it's a good thing. It's a good problem to have.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we'll get on that calendar real soon then. We'll figure out our schedules and around. We got event season coming up pretty hot and heavy this year. So we'll deconflict with all that. And I think we got a couple in February, but we got some openings. So maybe we can get on the calendar for February again.
Yeah, for sure, man. You guys traveling a lot this year?
Yeah, I'm trying to sign out of the Army in February, and then I'll be moving back to Colorado, where my family's still in Colorado Springs, and then I'm going to be on the road a bunch. Well, I won't be on the road. I'll be flying in, but Garrett will be on the road with some of the other guys, and I'll be flying into some of these shows. We're going to be at some big ones. We're going to ATA, and SHOT Show, National Wild Turkey, Great American up in Pennsylvania. Then we've got Illinois Deer Classic, Iowa Deer Classic, and then all the Mountain Archery Fest 3D shoots. And then we'll be at the Western Hunt Fest shoots too. So we did a couple last year, and this year we're hitting it hard. So our off season is going to be pretty filled. But the good thing is we got, you know, 2 week breaks here and there. We can fill up with some traveling and some hunts and a little bit of reprieve from the road. Cause I'm sure you've done those expos. They get exhausting. It's fun to meet everybody, but when you talk to 200 people a day and sitting under fluorescent lights for a week, it wears on you.
Yeah, man. I used to, I was doing the Indiana Deer and Turkey Expo for a few years, and there's about 45,000 people come through in 3 days. I would literally leave there on the last day with no voice. I couldn't talk.
Yep.
I hear that. And it was nonstop. I'd have people 15 deep standing in line to talk to me about booking hunts and stuff. Show coordinator came up to me 1 year, and I had a TV show or a TV running with I had put together a kill shot clip. So I had a guy ride with me for months, and he just filmed everything that we shot. So I was just taking the impact shots, bullets hitting, arrows hitting, and just doing like 2 or 3 second clips and just rolling it over. And I probably had 200 kills on this kill shot clip and just had it running all day long. And it would stop traffic. Like I had other vendors coming down going, "Hey man, everybody is standing in front of your booth. Can you turn that off? Because we aren't getting any business down here." And I'm like, "Well, brother, that ain't my problem. I'm here to generate business and that's what I'm doing." And, they complained so much. The show coordinator was like, "You need to take your TV down." I'm like, it ain't happening. Like I paid my fees. I paid my dues. I'm here. Those guys got stuff running on a TV. Just cause it ain't as cool as mine, that ain't my problem. And, ended up stopped doing that show because I tried to rebook it the next year and they flat out told me, "No problem, but you can't run that clip."
Wow.
And I'm like, man, it generated so much business for me and so much like
that's
interest.
Ridiculous.
And they were like, "Yeah, but you were stopping the flow of traffic." And I'm like, well, that's kind of how you get business.
That's kind of the point.
And that's why I'm here. And they were like, you can't do it. And I'm like, well, you can give my booth to somebody else then. But I do a lot of the SCI shows. I did one last year with Grand Slam Club Ovis. That was a good show. Kind of a small personal show, but everybody that walked in that door was there to buy something. And that was a good one. But a lot of the SCI stuff, they've been good to me.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I think we're on the wait list for SCI, so hopefully we can get in there next year. So
yeah. Yeah, I think they're trying to do I talked to the guy that does the hunt coordination thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's hunted with me. And he was telling me they're trying to do something to make it a little more easy and a little more friendly for the outfitters in the States to get in and not cater to the, you know, guys overseas so much and stuff.
That's good.
So maybe if they did, I've tried to get in there. I tried to get in there last year and they were like, "Man, this thing's been booked for it's real difficult to get into."
Yeah, I think it's so. Actually, now that I think about it, I know Dallas Safari Club, that one I think is a 3-year wait list. So we're going to, and you have to donate every year. So I've got
to
go.
Yeah, you have to donate every year to get to it.
Yeah. And so yep. I've got to donate 3 years in a row. And I don't even know if it's worth it because it's not exactly our target demographic, but it's such a big show in Dallas, which is such a hub for us. But I think it'll make sense, but we'll see. I know it's a lot of, I don't know. It can't hurt, you know, it's just more exposure. And there's a lot of guys that just go walk around there. So,
yeah, and that's where I got into the stuff with that Indiana Deer and Turkey Expo. It was, man, 45,000 people. You leave there not being able to even talk. And you might book 6-8 hunts to where I go to the Safari Club show. It's a one-night auction, a 2-day show. I might talk to 150 people, but I book 40 hunts.
Yeah, that's way better.
You know, and it's just way more personable. You get to spend time and talk to people, and, you know, they do the dinners and the banquets, and it's not a run as many people through the door as we can. It's just not that type of a deal, but it's been good to me, but we've been so busy the last few years. I just haven't done any shows, and I honestly don't foresee needing to even do any. I did the Grand Slam Club Ovis last year because I took a guy hunting that was on the board. He didn't even tell me. He goes home and signs me up, pays for my booth, pays for everything, for a membership, calls me up and he goes, "Hey, you're going to Vegas in January." And I'm like, "Why am I going to Vegas?" He's like, "Because I bought you a booth at the Grand Slam Club Ovis show." And I was like, we probably needed to talk about that before you did that. And he was like, "Look, I sit on their board. We need you. And you're going to do well there." I went and did it. Man, me and my wife went and did it. And we probably booked $50,000 in hunts in a day.
Fuck yeah. That's awesome. Incredible.
And it was like, that's awesome. And same thing, you know, we were probably the cheapest hunt in the room. They were auctioning sheep hunts and stuff off there for $300,000.
Yeah.
So our $3,500 trophy alligator hunts pennies to the other stuff.
Yep.
But we had outfitters all throughout the show coming up going like, you know, what are you guys doing? Because every time we look down here, you have a crowd around your booth and we haven't sold a hunt. And I'm like, well, my hunts are $3,500, yours are $75,000. So we got a little different thing going on here.
Yeah.
But yeah, we sold a bunch. That was a good show for us. But other than that, I've been pretty light on the shows. We've been so busy, I don't know that it makes sense for us right now to do them.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. And it's a big lift. Like, yeah, it's good for us right now with where we're at, but you guys, doesn't sound like at all. You need the business. You're covered up. So it's awesome.
Yeah. And if anything ever comes available, like if I have a cancellation on my South Dakota mule deer or whitetail or my Montana stuff or something, I can just send out a couple of emails and usually fill those spots. And I've actually never even had to do that. I already know a handful of people I can call that are going to jump on those spots.
You can add us to that list.
Yeah, for sure, man. And that's what I like is like, I've got a handful of people that I know I can call and I don't even have to worry about it.
Yep.
So I get to really, actually, if you want to look at it, I get to hand pick, and then it rolls into, okay, me and my buddies are going hunting.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's not even like I'm trying to book a stranger or, hey, I hope I can get somebody to fill this spot. I got a handful of buddies that I know that are going to take that stuff and we're going to go have a blast.
Hell yeah.
And that's the hunting that I love. That's when it's in the position that I'm in. That's when it's good to me, is when I get to roll with a couple of guys that, you know, I got to get paid because that's what I do and it's my job.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, if you take the money out of it, it's like I just went hunting with some friends. And that just, it just makes hunting camp different, man. It's just so nice to be able to do something like that.
That's what it's all about. Getting good guys and gals in camp and just swapping stories and experiences. Yeah. And learning from each other and having new experiences in new places. So, you know, we're stoked.
Absolutely.
To had the opportunity through Jake to meet you and go down there and hunt and have that experience. And yep. We're excited for the future. So we'll definitely be back.
No, absolutely. Looking forward to having you guys. Like I say, this new ranch, and we got this stuff out west. You guys will, we'll definitely be looking at some different parts of the world together. And I love that, man. Like that's what gets me, after all that I've done for so many years with the hunting business, that's what gets me pumped up.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Me too. Where do you want people to find you on social media, Matt?
So on social media, you know, I'm Triple M Outfitters Unlimited, Instagram and Facebook and YouTube channel. I haven't done a lot with the YouTube channel. There's some stuff on there. I've tried to make that a little better as of late. Once I hired the marketing people, let them control that. But Triple M Outfitters Unlimited. My website, same thing, triplemoutfittersunlimited.com. All my pricing and stuff is on there. I will say that I don't have any of my Out West stuff on there. It's basically just my Osceola turkey, alligator, and hogs. If anybody wants to inquire about the Out West stuff, just give me a call or shoot me an email or something. I take a very limited amount of people to that. So I don't put it out on the website to be widespread because I'll just get 100 inquiries and I can only take 10, 12 people. So it's, I keep that pretty low key, but, you know, if guys want to get on my email list or something for cancellations or something like that, emails mattcates71@yahoo.com. They can email me. They can call me at 321-863-2985. And if you call, text. If you do call and I don't answer, I will get back to you. It's best to text me because I hunt every day. And when I'm on a hunt, just like when people come hunt with me, you know, if a guy comes and hunts with me, I'm not going to be on my phone.
Yep.
So I usually do some phone calls and stuff at night. Emails probably best, because I can lay in bed at 1 o'clock in the morning and return emails. Text message, I can always sneak a text message in here and there when things get slow. But if a guy books a hunt with me, I'm definitely not the guy that's going to be sitting there on his phone all day long. I'm going to be performing and getting stuff taken care of that they came to do. So.
Hell yeah. Well, you guys should definitely go check out Triple M. We, you know, had a blast. It's a very unique hunt, especially if you're not from that area, and it's a hell of experience, and it's well worth the price of admission. Like we talked about earlier, it's very reasonable for what you're doing. It's kind of a choose your own adventure. You can do a little bit of everything out there. So definitely check it out and get involved, because it's fun.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt. Looking forward to chatting some more soon.
All right, guys. You guys have a good night, and we'll be in touch soon. You guys hit me up. Let's get you guys on the schedule and get back down here. And we got some hogs to get. Got to get their minds right. So
come on.
Need you guys to come down and put some work in.
You got it, man.
We'll do it.
All right, fellas. You guys have a good night.
You too.
Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it.
Take care.